Just a couple things real quickly. If you weren't here this morning, we handed out a book to everyone called Word-Centered Church by Jonathan Lehman. Copies of these are out in the information booth out there on the counters. Feel free to pick one up. They're free of charge, and we have enough for everybody. And there's also a set of questions in there. We'll have a set of questions each week as we work our way through the book. This just works us through the introduction to the book. So feel free to pick up one of those books for each person. If you didn't get one this morning, they're out there on the counter. Then also, as I mentioned, this is our last study tonight in the book of Proverbs. We've been in Proverbs for a little while, haven't we? We did our study back in the fall in chapters 1 through 9. And now we've spent a number of weeks since the beginning of the year just thinking through some different themes and running them through the book of Proverbs, chapters 10 through 31. And that comes to an end tonight. Next Sunday night, Lord willing, we'll start a new study that will take us here for a couple of months into the future. And we're going to go back to the New Testament, and we're going to look at the epistle of 1 John, the epistle of 1 John. So looking forward to that study. It's a wonderful book. Many of us are very familiar with the book. So it'll be good to just kind of go through it with fresh eyes. And it's a great book of assurance. And I think that's what the little posters say that are around the building introducing the study, is that we can rest assured. That's kind of the theme of the book of 1 John. So we'll look forward to that next Sunday night. We will have some interruptions coming up to our normal Sunday night schedule, so just keep those, just keep a watch on your bulletins, your calendars, get those synced up. I think the first one is the end of this month, March, I think it's the 29th, is a fifth Sunday, and you all know we have, we set that aside for our ABF classes to have fellowships on that day, so we won't be meeting then. And then a couple of weeks later, I think it's April the 12th, is Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday. We won't have any Sunday night activities that day either. But we will have a special Good Friday service, as we have the last several years. We'll be combining with several other churches again. And this year we'll be meeting down at Gray Road Baptist Church, where Pastor Toby is. And we'll be meeting there on whatever that day is. I think the night... maybe the 9th or the 10th, maybe April 10th, that sounds right, is Good Friday. So looking forward to that as well. But to the text here, we've got a big study tonight. It's one of the biggest subjects in the book of Proverbs. We're going to be tackling the subject of pride tonight. And that is, that's a big one. You remember in the traditional list of the seven deadly sins, pride is number what? Number one. It trumps even sins of greed and lust. Why is this? Well, I think a lot of times we understand this because it was the original sin. You go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and it's the ultimate source from which all other sins come from. You remember when, actually in the book of 1 John, when Jesus describes the world, he describes it in a threefold way. You remember? The lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. It's one of those sources of evil that so many other things come from. So as we get started here tonight, a couple of just questions to get us thinking a little bit in your study sheets. Number one is, what is your definition of pride? So without looking up any theological books or anything, or searching for a Bible verse, what, just from what you know of the Scriptures, how would you define pride? Pride is what? How would you define it? What do you think? Yeah, okay. So a lot of times we talk about pride, like national pride, or taking pride in, you know, something that a child or grandchild does, or you know, or pride in our church, or you know, you could have that kind of satisfaction. Not an always a sinful thing, though, right? When you think about pride in a sinful sense, if you were to take that definition, Gil, a little further, it's a satisfaction about a self-accomplishment. How would you turn that into something with a little more of a sinful bent to it? What do you think? So, yeah, I mean, we're putting him on the spot, right? But what did he emphasize in his definition the second time? I, me, self, right? The elevation of ourselves. How else might you describe or define pride? What do you think? Okay. Okay. I know best. Okay. How else would you define it? Okay, selfishness, obsessed with yourself, yeah, ignoring the needs of others. Self-glory. Yeah, I mean, what does the Westminster Confession say? The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, right? So one of the most basic things we're to do as human beings is to glorify God. So instead of glorifying God, if we glorify ourselves, boy, that's got to be one of the worst things that we can possibly do, right? Yeah. Any other thoughts, nuances that we haven't hit yet, Betty? Yeah. 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 And you see that in a lot of different cultures, too, don't we? Well, you can go around the world, even in very poor countries. There is something about honor and name and reputation that is a big deal to a lot of people. Yeah. Of course, when we look at Jesus, He made Himself of no reputation, didn't He? Yeah. Yeah. So there may be even dangers even in what we think of as a good kind of a pride. There may be some temptations that we have to be careful of, right? Well, number two here, do you think that pride aptly describes the sin of Genesis 3? Think back to the garden. We've got the serpent there. We've got the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the fruit. They've been told not to eat that fruit. And here is Eve. She's being tempted by the devil. And we know what happens. Do you think that pride is a good description of what took place there? What do you think? What do you think? Shake your heads at me. Yes or no? What do you think? A lot of stupid? Okay. And what were they being tempted with? What did Satan tell Eve? If she ate of the fruit, what would result? I mean, she's not going to die, right? So that's... Okay, let's go there. She would be like God, knowing good and evil, right? Element of pride there? To be like God... Now, we talk all the time about wanting to be like Jesus. That's not a bad thing, right? So how is this different than that? Was Eve saying, oh, I can be more like my creator. Let me take a bite. Is that the kind of like God that she was aiming for? What do you think? Does she just want to be more like him in a good way? Okay. Looking for power, looking for self elevation. Yep. Maybe God's hiding something from them or keeping something from them. Yeah, we can speculate a lot. The text doesn't tell us everything, does it? The temptation in the garden, though, was to be like God, wasn't it? Knowing good and evil. And God knows good and evil in that He decides and He determines from His holy character what is good and what is evil, right? So in other words, mankind's desire, first with Eve and then with Adam, was to really usurp God's authority as the rule maker. Because that's really what it came down to when it came to knowing good and evil. We rejected God's good warning about the fruit. We saw it was good for food, right? It was a delight to the eyes, the text says, Genesis 3:6. The tree was desired to make one wise. You know, I know better than what God told us to do, right? I want to be boss. Pride. It's often noted that the center of the word sin is the letter I, right? What is not often noted is that I is also at the center of the word pride. Proverbs 21:4 puts it this way. Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked are sin. So in this final study, we're going to again look at what Proverbs 10-31 has to say about one topic. This time, the topic of pride. As well as trying to note some of the interconnections to other themes that we've already seen. And if it's true, if we're right, that pride is close to the very heart of what it is to sin, then it is a good theme to finish with, isn't it? Because it ultimately challenges us about our response to God's word in Proverbs. Are we going to respond to all that we've read in this book in the sinfulness of pride or the pride of sin, however you want to put it? What's the alternative? What's the right response to the book of Proverbs? Is it I know better than God? Let's look at some Proverbs. Number 3, we got a bunch of verses here we'll look up. And maybe we can kind of do what we've done before here and just have several people read through these. And again, these are verses that came up in a concordance search on the words pride and proud in the book of Proverbs. So something you can easily do, go to a Bible search program on the internet like BibleGateway.com or BibleHub.com or there's lots of other ones, Bible.com. And do a search, you'll find many of these same kinds of verses. So what is the nature of pride? So let me just go around here and maybe we can get some people to read some verses for us. Gil, do you want to read Proverbs 11:2? And Tom, would you look up 13:10? And Shannon, would you look up 15:25? And Derek, do you want to look up 16:5? And Bill, do you want to look up 16:18-19? And Ginny, 18:12. It's a good overture, too. Oh, were you going to say that? Okay. And Jackie, would you look up 21:4? And Nancy Landers, 21:24. And then Ron, would you look up 29:23? So we'll read through these verses here in rapid succession. And what are we after? What is the nature of pride? What does it mean? What is it all about? Okay, so let's start with Gil.
When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom.
Okay, so what do we learn about pride there? Okay, the result of pride is disgrace. And what's the opposite of pride? Humility. Okay, that's something that's good to know as well. Tom? Okay? So that's a pretty amazing statement if you stop and think about it. Only by pride comes contention. What does contention mean? What's another word for that? Resistance, fighting, conflict, yeah. Strife, yep. Only by pride. That's when a couple of people get in a fight, pride's involved. A couple of married people having a hard argument, pride's involved. Conflict between nations, pride involved. Anytime there's contention, Proverbs says, only by pride it comes. It's interesting. It's an interesting principle, isn't it? Something to think about. Shannon? Okay. So what's the Lord's attitude toward pride? You're going down, right? Yeah. Proud house is going to be destroyed, right? Derek? All right, so again, what is the Lord's attitude toward pride, toward arrogance? It's an abomination. That's a pretty strong word. Abomination. Bill.
Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. It is better to be of the Holy Spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil.
Wow. A lot there. We've heard these verses before, haven't we? So what goes along with pride? If you're going to be a proud person, just expect destruction. Expect fall, right? It's falling. It's what it goes with. If you want to be a proud person, this is what comes along with the package, right? What's the opposite of pride in there?
Humility,
a lowly spirit, did it say? Yeah, yeah. And then what did it say at the end? It's better to have the okay. So you may end up with some kind of profiting, or you may end up with some kind of prosperity or wealth or goods by associating yourself with proud, arrogant people. But God says it's better to be lowly, even if you're with poor. Yeah. Okay.
Before his downfall, a man's heart is proud, but humility comes before
him. Some of the same principles there again, right? You want to be a proud person, get ready to fall. Humility comes before honor. Nancy? Or Jackie? So there's a pretty good identification, right? If you had any hesitation or confusion about whether pride is a good thing or not in the eyes of the Lord, he calls it sin. Yeah. Nancy? Wow. Okay. So could you read that one more time? Wow. What was that word? Overweening? Overweening. Okay. Weaning. Interesting. All right. I'm not sure what that means. what do we learn there about pride? There's an association with mockery as well. A lot of times if you meet someone who is someone who puts down other people, who makes fun of other people, that seems to be part of their nature or character. There's a proud person there, right? Yeah. And I don't know what that word anybody know what that word means? Overweening? Or does somebody have it in a different translation maybe? Does it give us another? Let's see, that was 21:24? Yeah. He's a scoffer, right? And what's the last part of the verse? Huh. Arrogant pride. Okay, so maybe arrogant is another idea for that word. Okay. Arrogant pride. That's an interesting adjective to put onto pride. It's like saying pride, isn't it? Like really intense. Okay, and then Ron, you have the last one, right? Yeah. Again, just reinforcing so many of these truths we've already read. So, number four, what are the consequences of pride? What did we hear? What kind of words? Destruction. Contention. Falling. Strife. Arrogance. And why are these the consequences of pride? Why are people going to fall? Why are people going to be destroyed by this? From? Okay. It's like pride. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was another word, abomination. So who determines right and wrong? God, from His holiness, right? And God has determined pride has consequences. And these consequences are bad, right? Really bad. Now, Proverbs 21:24 tells us that scoffer or mocker is the name of that arrogant, haughty person. So one way to understand more about pride is to look for proverbs about mockers and scoffers, right? Because if the proverb says something about mockery or scoffing, then we know that has the connection to pride as well. So let's read some more verses here. I don't know if we'll get to all of these or not, but let's get to several of them because we have more to look up later. Where do we leave off? Nancy, okay, that's where we left off. All right, so... Nancy, do you want to do Proverbs 13:1? Oh, okay. No worries, sister. Doug, do you want to do Proverbs 13:1? And Laura, do you want to read 14:6? And then Betty, do you want to read 14:9? And then Donna, do you want to read 15:12? And Tom, do you want to read 17:5? And Norma, do you want to take 19:25? And let's just read those for now. And I think we'll probably get the idea, which is reflected in all these others. So this is the question we're trying to answer. In what ways is the mocker proud? So be thinking about that, the answer to that question. In what ways is the mocker proud? Okay, Proverbs 13:1. Okay, so what does it say about the scoffer? Doesn't listen to who? Who's being rebuked? Okay, he's not listening to his father. So we could say that children not listening to their parents' rebuke is a form of what? Pride. Because it said, what is it saying? What you're telling me is not as important as what I think about this. I don't want to hear it, right? 14:6. Is that Laura? Do you have that one? A scoffer seeks wisdom in vain. What does that mean? So even if he looks for it, he's not going to find it. So that's an interesting thought, isn't it? And this is related to a scoffer again, right? So another element of pride is not being able to find wisdom, even if you look for it. So pride is something that blinds you to wisdom. Is that another way we could say it, maybe? How about 14:9? Betty? So they mock at the what? Guilt offering. Okay, so going back into the Jewish culture here. So they're offering sacrifices for their sins, and fools mock those. Wow. So how will we put that in our context today? I mean, we're not sacrificing animals anymore, but when we think of a guilt sacrifice, what do we think of? Okay, and what sacrifice has been made for our sin, right? The one sacrifice for all, right? So if fools mock those guilt sacrifices, then maybe it would be safe to say that in our day, people who would mock the work of Jesus are considered fools. Tom? Yeah. You got to be careful what you laugh at, right? So interesting. Okay, where are we at? Whoever's next, Donna. So that kind of takes us back to that children and parents thing almost again, right? But it doesn't put it in the context of children and parents. It talks about anybody who doesn't like to be corrected, right? Anybody here like to be corrected? So we're probably all a little proud, aren't we? We're probably all a little proud. Yeah. So there's probably a little bit of pride in all of us. Someone who invites correction or who receives correction, that takes humility, doesn't it? To take the criticism or correction of someone else. It does. We don't like to be shown that we've done wrong. Brother Tom? Oh, I didn't take that. Absolutely. Sure. Brother Tom? Overweening, yeah. Okay, so I think that goes right along with what we were thinking. Yep, good. Wow. Mocking the poor. And who they say it insults their maker, right? Wow. What are ways that people insult the poor? Betty? Yeah, sure. Yeah, we probably all said that at times, haven't we? Or thought it. And of course, we don't know whether or not they're legitimate or not, right? On the face of it, yeah. Yeah. But someone who, and what was the word again? Insults the poor? Mocks the poor. Okay. So maybe flaunting their wealth would be another way of looking at that, showing what they have as compared to what other kids do this in school, don't they? You know, hey, look at this. I got this new pair of Nike shoes. You know, oh, look at your old ratty shoes, or oh, look at my new dress. Oh, that look at that girl over there. She's wearing awful clothes. Or we do things like that sometimes, don't we? And it's showing our pride. Oh, Betty, Betty's our illustration lady tonight. Oh, sure. Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah, but you're right. There's another way that, you know, anytime we compare things, in fact, doesn't the Bible say to us Christians that comparing ourselves among ourselves is not a wise thing to do? Right? Is James that says that, maybe? Not a wise thing to do. Well, number six. Well, do we answer that question? In what ways is the mocker proud? We saw a number of ways there, right? Receiving correction or not. What else? In recap there. The way they treat the poor. Yeah, they have trouble even recognizing, finding wisdom. Yeah. Yep, blinded. Well, number six, what will happen to the mocker? I don't think we didn't actually get into all those verses. We didn't read all those verses. I think some of those might have some more of those kind of consequences in it. But one of those last verses was, did we get Norma's too? Oh, we got another verse yet. We didn't get Norma's. You were hidden behind Doug's head. Okay, can you read just the first part of that again? Strike a scoffer, and the simple will learn prudence. What does that say about what should happen to scoffers? Yeah, they should be punished, right? They should be punished in some way. Striking, I'm not sure exactly if that just means, you know, smack him or hit him. I'm not advocating anyone to go out and start punching people. But yeah, it does seem like there should be some kind of strong correction for someone who's a mocker. Yeah, and of course, when they, like I said earlier, when they insult the poor, they're insulting their maker, and God doesn't take kindly to that at all, does He? So what we know is going to happen to the mocker is the same thing that happens to the proud, right? They're going to fall. They're going to stumble. They're going to be destroyed. You know, they're linked. Those two ideas are linked, mocking and pride. A few more verses to illustrate what the proud are like. Down under number seven, let's look at a few of these as well. Let's see, we're back at the top of the batting order here, right? So, Gil, do you want to read 12:15 and Tom 18:2 and Shannon 26:12 and Derek 28:26 and then Bill 25:14, Jenny 25:6-7, Jackie 27:1. And Nancy Landers 38:9. So what are the proud like from these additional verses here? Gil?
The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice.
So what are the proud like? Wise in their own eyes. Are we ever like that? Yeah. I guess the classic illustration might be the guy driving down the road who doesn't ask for directions, right? Yeah. I know how to get there. Yeah, they're so lost. Yeah, yeah. But is there not even in that a sense of pride, right? I'm not going to listen to anyone else's. Yeah. Doug. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You should have watched the sign there. Yeah. Okay, Tom.
A fool has much light and understanding, but that his heart may discover itself.
No delight in understanding. Do you know people like that? You give them God's truth, and they They don't take any delight in it. You give a Christian God's truth, and what do? Well, yeah, sometimes they ignore it, right? But what should a Christian do when we give them God's word? Yeah, respond to it, rejoice in it. Yeah. Obey it, apply it. Yep. The fool doesn't do that. They don't delight in God's word at all, right? Don't want to hear it sometimes, right? Stop it. I don't want to hear it. Shannon? Huh. That kind of says it itself, doesn't it? Self-explanatory. Yeah. Derek? All right. So again, several of these verses say the exact same thing. They trust in their own wisdom, right? Wise in their own eyes. Let's look at this next batch here. Bill?
Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give.
It's a great picture, isn't it? All the signs of the storm are there, right? The clouds, the wind, but no rain comes. It's just like the guy, how does it phrase it? Yeah. I can do this. And it's just full of himself. So boasting is another, you know, quality of the proud, isn't it? Yeah. We all know people like that too, don't we? They can do everything better than someone else. Or they always have a story to top your story. You know, there's elements of pride in that, right? Boasting. Yeah. Jenny?
Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence, and do not claim a place among great men. It is better for him to say to you, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before a noble.
Wow. What was the first part of that sentence again?
Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence.
Exalt yourself.
Yes.
Rather than king inviting you to come up and take your place, you exalt yourself, and as a result, the king may humiliate you. Yeah. So again, it's that self-seeking, right? Self-serving. Was it Jeremiah says, "Seekest thou great things for yourself? Seek them not." Yeah. Well, there's a whole lot of verses that go right along with that, aren't there? God humbles the proud but exalts the humble. Yeah, there's all. James has a number of verses. Yeah. Jackie? Huh. Yep, we've heard that one, haven't we? Don't boast about tomorrow. You never know what's coming. Coronaviruses? Famine, war. I always have a Kayla story. Here's a Kayla story for today. So they were at in Uganda on Friday. They were at a missionary get together, and they were in the city where they live, but they were at a different location for the night. And they had gone out to run some errands or buy groceries or something. And when they came back, one of the other missionary ladies who was there had killed a green mamba in the room where Kayla was sleeping. It's a very poisonous snake. Yeah, a deadly snake. And Kayla hates snakes. So why did I bring that up? You never know what the future holds. She chopped its head off. So I can show you a picture later if you want to see it. Yeah. But you never know, right? You never know. You never know what can happen tomorrow. We were talking in our ABF class this morning how in one of the families that comes here on Sunday morning. In fact, they were here this morning. I don't know if some of you noticed. Wade and Tanisha Coleman and then Bryce is their son, And then his girlfriend, Autumn, comes very regularly on Sunday mornings as well. This morning, her parents were with her. You may have noticed up front here. And her mom was crying through most of the service this morning because this last week her brother's wife was died suddenly after struggling for about a year with cancer. And she's only in her 20s. And so here's a husband who probably thought he had, you know, a whole life ahead with his wife and, you know, perhaps children, and now, you know, he is the barrier this week, right? Now you just don't know. We just don't know what's going to happen from one day to another. So what do we not do, right? We don't boast. We don't boast, right? I think James again taught the Proverbs of the New Testament, right? James talks about this. Doesn't it say you should say, if it's the Lord's will, we'll do this or that, right? That keeps us humble, right? Remembering that God's plans are not always our plans, are they? All right, rabbit trail. Where do we leave off here? Nancy Landers, go ahead. So we have to be careful in our prosperity that we act like we don't need God. Or we have to be careful in our poverty that we, how do they put it, if we're poor at the end, that we don't, so we don't dishonor God. So whatever state we're in, we need to be careful that we give God the right honor, the right recognition, the first place. That was a long verse. A lot of good things in there. Was that the last one there? Yeah, 38 and 9. All right, let's move on here. There's a little section there on interconnections with pride. For sake of time tonight, I'm not going to go through those, but you have those bullet points there, right? With some verses. So if pride is close to the heart of sin, if that's kind of a way that we're describing it, then it shouldn't come as a surprise that pride touches on all kinds of areas in our life, right? So those other proverbs that are written there all talk about pride, but they also relate on some of the other themes that we've looked at in this study. So we've looked at work and career and wealth and marriage and family and friendship and our speech. So how does pride interact with all of those different areas? Well, those verses will give you some. So that'd be a great, just if you have an extra day to sit down and do some extra devotions, some meditation in God's Word, that'd be a great little 15-20 minute study for you to kind of think through that. Let's talk about pride in Proverbs here for just a minute, and then we'll jump into the last set of questions. When you read the Bible, and we've said this many times here at Heather Hills, context is your best friend. And as we come to the end of this series of studies, we've looked at detail at several particular themes in Proverbs 10 to 31. It's appropriate to kind of step back and look again at Proverbs as a whole. We've kind of narrowed it down into some specific themes, but we noted, if you remember, all the way back in the beginning of our study in the fall in Proverbs, we talked about how Proverbs 1 through 9 functions as kind of an introduction to the rest of the book of Proverbs, and it helps us to get our thinking oriented towards the fear of the Lord. Do you remember we talked about that? Urging us to follow his wisdom. He urges us as a father to choose one path and not another, right? And he put it in the picture of two women, right? We're supposed to choose Lady Wisdom and not Madam Folly. Remember those two paths that he kept asking us to choose? Well, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs finishes in chapter 31. with a picture of just how good Lady Wisdom is. And the excellent wife is a kind of personification of wisdom. She brings good and not harm to any man who finds her. And at her heart, remember the proverb says that her beauty is that she fears the Lord. That she fears the Lord. So chapters 1 through 9 and chapter 31 are kind of like a frame or a bookends around the wisdom that's found in chapters 10 through 30. The frame on either side, the bookends, say that the fear of the Lord, the Creator, the God of all the world, the fear of Him is the beginning of wisdom. It's the foundation of wisdom. And the choices that we make between wisdom and foolishness lie before all of us, right? But the painting in the middle of the frame is important too. If we're thinking about it like a picture, this is kind of the frame, and then the picture in the middle is important. We've spent these last 8 studies looking at all these sayings in Proverbs 10 to 31 in detail, and the wisdom is in the detail, not the devil's in the details. The wisdom is in the details in this case. And as we understand in detail what it means to walk wisely in this area or that area of life, so we're walking step by step the path of wisdom that Proverbs 1 through 9 told us all about. And we also hear in detail the call of Lady Wisdom, and we enjoy the delights that she's prepared for us in her house. But it is true understanding, true listening, that Proverbs is talking about. Not just our intellectual response. We don't just look at these things and just say, okay, yeah, that makes good sense. True understanding is something that we trust, that we take action on. It trusts by obeying. Remember the old song we sing? Trust and obey. Those things go together. And it's taking action and obeying. In that, we experience the goodness of the Lord's wisdom. It's in living out the wisdom that we truly learn how to understand. And so that's why looking at this theme of pride is such an appropriate way to finish up these explorations that we've had in Proverbs. It's not just one of the themes in Proverbs 10 to 31. It is the theme that focuses our attention on how we should look at Proverbs as a whole, how we should respond to Proverbs as a whole. So let's look at 8 through 12 here in our study sheet and finish out this study here tonight. Number 8, both Lady Wisdom and Madam Folly, back in Proverbs 9, call out to the simple. So here are some verses that talk about the simple. How is the simple similar to, but also different from, the scoffer, the mocker that we were just learning about? So let's read these. Where do we leave off? Ron, do you want to read 1:22? And Doug, do you want to read 8:5? Laura, 13:1. Betty, 15:12. Donna, 19:25, and Brother Tom, 21:11. And let's just hear these proverbs about the simple and think how they're similar to the scoffer and mocker and how they're different from the scoffer and mocker. So let's think about that, and we'll read through these. Where are we at, Ron? Go ahead, brother. Okay, so what is something similar there? Scoffers do what? The mockers, the scoffers. Well, what did the verse say? Scoffers or mockers, they love. Is that what it said? Yeah. They delight in it. So just like simple person loves their simplicity, mockers like being mockers. So there's a similarity, right? That's a similarity. Let's go on to the next verse. Brother Doug? Okay. So there's another similarity, right? Both of these kinds of people need to what? Learn. They got some learning to do, right? They both have some growing to do. Laura? Okay. Was that 13:1? Okay, so it didn't really talk about simple, did it? Was there something about simple in there? I guess they're thinking of the son as the simple one. So there's a wise way for him to act, and then there's a mocking way for him to act. So in this one, it's not really a similarity, is there? There's more of a contrast, right? So the wise son was going to do what, Laura? The wise son's going to hear. The scoffer son is going to do what? Not listen. So there's a big difference between the way simple and mockers respond. Mockers aren't going to hear you. Yeah. So the one hears and listens, and the other one rejects it, right? Is that what it said? The other one doesn't hear the rebuke or doesn't listen to it. The mockers, the scoffers. So I think he's trying to just draw a contrast there. I think he's thinking of the son as the simple one who has to make these choices. And so if he's going to be wise, he's going to listen. Right. So when you're dealing with people, if you're dealing, one of the ways you can tell if you're dealing with a simple person or a mocker is by the way they listen to you. Right. Let's go on, Betty. OK. So, again, we see they don't like correction. Right. We're not going to listen to that. Mm-hmm. I was going to think of examples from parenting here, but there's so many of them. I can think of times when all of my children did not like correction, right? I can also remember some times when, especially when they were younger, when correction, when you could almost just look a certain way. Do you know what I'm talking about, right? And the child melts before you. Hopefully not out of fear, but just their heart wasn't hardened necessarily, you know, at that time. But kids, as they grow older, they get used to hardening a lot more, don't they? We're all very practiced at hardening ourselves. Yeah. Yeah, Jackie. That was it. Yeah. Shape up, yeah. Yeah, or the old wait till your father gets home. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. That might be a little more fear. Next verse, where are we, Donna? That's interesting. So that we've heard that verse before too, right? Strike the scoffer, and it affects the simple. So if the simple, so simple one sees how, sees the result, the consequence, the punishment meted out on a scoffer or a mocker, and they learn. Yeah. We can think of some examples of that too, can't we? Yeah. Did you ever learn something by watching someone else get punished for their mockery? Yeah. Or rebellion? Yeah. Interesting. We have one more, right, Tom? Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, almost exactly the same. Huh. Interesting. Good. Let's keep going here. Number 9. Who has more hope? Can we answer this question? The simple or the mocker? It seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? Why? Now, is there hope for a mocker, too? Yes. But if we're answering more hope, why would you say the simple? Teachable. They listen. Yeah. The pride is hardened. Yeah. 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 That has to be humbled. That's right. Yeah. Number 10, sandwiched between these calls of Lady Wisdom and Madam Folly in chapter 9 is the warning of chapter 9, 7 through 12. Let's go ahead and turn back there for a minute. Proverbs 9. 7 through 12, here's what it says. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. And he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. If you're wise, you're wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. Why do you think that warning is right smack dab in between the call of Lady Wisdom at the beginning of the chapter and the call of Madam Folly, which comes right after this? Why do you think that warning is right in between there? Who's the simple one in Proverbs 9? The son, the young man coming up to this picture in life, coming up to a crossroads where he sees two houses, two women. They're calling out almost the same thing, remember? So what does this warning help the simple one to do? Yeah. Know how to choose. Know how to discern. Go in the right path. Right? So what is he learning? What is he learning in this warning? What's that? Listen. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And one of the ways you can tell if the person is a wise person or a scoffer is, again, by offering correction and seeing how they respond to it, right? Yep. Number 11, how does what we have learned about pride and the scoffer in the study help us to understand that warning that we just read? How does it help us to understand that?
Well, one thing I think, and I don't want to get off the subject, but these kids, even from a young age, that's why they need to be in church, because this pride issue becomes a big deal in all competition in school. I feel like, from a young age, they're being taught to, you take it, you lay it all on the battlefield. Mm. And, the best man So the pride issue is really instilled in our kids from the very beginning. And I'm not saying that's bad.
Yeah, maybe there's a different way to say it, too, because I think we would want to say that pride is probably instilled in all of us, right, because of sin, because we're all born with a sinful nature. But there are certain things in our lives, and like you said, from an early age even, and sometimes in competitions, that bring out that pride, that selfishness, and we have to really stay on top of that, you know, as first of all, as brothers and sisters in Christ to these little ones, or perhaps parents, and make sure that they stay away from that danger. And learn how to receive correction and rebuke and fear the Lord. I mean, that's the number. That's the biggest thing, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It can be a painful teacher. Yeah. 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 Nebuchadnezzar is a great example. Lifted up in his pride, and God put him right down, didn't he? You're going to eat grass for a while. Yeah, like an animal. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Any other thoughts there? Keep moving on. Proverbs 3:34. Number 12 here. It says this. Toward the scorners, he is scornful. But to the humble, he gives favor. What is the alternative to being too proud to listen? Yeah. And why do you think that is? What do you say? Brother? Why do you think that is? Yeah. What is the alternative to being too proud to listen? Sure, sure. Pride goes both ways, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes teachers can be the arrogant ones. Yeah, that's a really bad combination. But there's a lot of them. Yeah. We're all tempted that way. Yeah. It's okay, sister.
I'm old.
It's all right.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Don't turn 75.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yes, it is. Yep.
I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably why I lost my train of thought. I'm just too old.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, the alternative to being too proud to listen is what? To be. Humble, somebody said, right? Right? To be humble. And why is that the alternative? Yeah. Yeah. So if we're going to say the difference between the proud and the humble, what would we say the difference is? Okay, so let's talk about consequences. They're right here in this verse. consequences for the mocker, the scorner? What is it going to be? You're going to meet a God who is scornful to you. That won't be pleasant. If you are humble, you will meet a God who gives you favor. I think that would be a nicer outcome, right? So that's one difference, the consequences. What else is different? What have we learned about the nature of proud or scornful versus the humble? The consequences are different. What about the nature of them? We just talked about the proud they're too proud to listen. And contrary to that, the humble are what? They're open, eager to listen, teachable, I think someone said earlier. They receive correction. They're blessed. Yep. They learn from the punishment of the scorners and others, right? The fools. Have a peace in heart. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, in counseling we learn that a lot of things like fear and anger in particular are rooted in pride. When you have a really angry person that you're dealing with, and most of the time that can be us looking in the mirror too. We have moments when we all get angry too. Anger comes from pride. It's a root of pride. And so you always have to find out what do I want so much that I am willing to sin to get it, like by getting angry, by blowing up, by lashing out. Right, and yeah, it doesn't end up helping us usually either, right? Yeah, good. Any final thoughts, comments tonight? This is a big subject. We could spend a lot more time on it. There's some homework questions as well. You can take this a little bit further. And I have an appendix on this one too, don't I? If you go to the very end, you'll find another sheet. See, it never stops. You'll see a sheet that says further exploration at the top of it. Looks like this. And so you can take this topic of pride and again, start working it through the book of Proverbs in relationship to other themes. Just like that earlier exercise. So you've got topics like the righteous and the wicked, anger and violence, life and death, wise and fool. And you can do some work in a curricula or a concordance, again, the Bible concordance. Look up words that are written there like righteous, wicked, anger, life, death, and see if you can find some things about pride and humility and how they interrelate with those themes as well. And there's some questions there that will help you kind of think through that process as well. So just to give you some more stuff, because you can never get enough stuff, right? So lots of tools for you to keep growing. But yeah. And living it out, right?
So what suggestions do you have for controlling the temptation you have for? I know I'm guilty of it.
Yeah. For pride?
Pride.
Well how do you cultivate humility? That would be the better question. You know, how do we stay humble before God? And I would say that in my experience, first of all, you need help, right? So I would think that self-control would be a big part of that, which is a fruit of the Spirit, right? So we need help. And also, I think when you consider that pride is such a obsession with ourself and what we want, when you turn your focus away from self and focus on serving other people, getting involved in ministry, spend your time focusing on the Lord and His Word. When you get anything you can do to get your attention off of yourself, that helps a lot in staying humble. Other thoughts? Doug, you're going to say something.
When you have an area of your life that you Yeah.
Win the argument. Yep. Yep, and then again, when you look at the root of anger and how it bears fruit in life, like we talked about anger and worry and fear and the different things that come out of pride, you can go to the scriptures and find help with all of those. When you're tempted with worry, go to prayer. You know, take it to the Lord. You know, rest in His sovereignty. Cast your burdens on Him. He cares for you, right? When you're afraid, you know, the opposite of fear, according to Scripture, is love. And so, that's where you need to focus on worship of the Lord and on loving God and loving your neighbor as well. Anger is a hard one because you're not thinking, real sanely a lot of times when you get worked up. But, some people have always said, count to 10 or whatever. There's some good truth in that. The first thing you need to do when you're mad is calm down. Whether that means, walking out of the room, getting somewhere where you can get control of your emotions first, and then go back and deal with whatever the problem is. Don't let it linger. But never deal with things, when your emotions are high. Got to calm yourself down first. Yeah. Doesn't calm them down. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the battle is in our thinking, and our thinking is what then results in some of the emotions. So good question. Yeah. Anything else? Final comments? Let's try to be like the Lord Jesus, right? Though He was God, He humbled Himself for us, was obedient all the way to death on a cross. Now, the one who humbled Himself is exalted. Just like God said, you humble yourself, I'll exalt you. Jesus is a great example of that. Humbled Himself, He's exalted. He's at the right hand of God, right? Yeah. So, humility is a good thing. It's not valued in our world. Yeah. It's not valued in our world, but it's valued in the real world. The world that God lives in and that we live in for Him. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for your good attention. Let's go ahead and pray, and then next Sunday we'll jump into 1 John, Lord willing. Looking forward to that.